Hello, and welcome to Season 10, Episode 7 of the Cartridge Club's Game of the Month podcast, where we bring together members of the Cartridge Club community to discuss our community playthrough. If you're new to the club or are interested in participating in future months for games like Elden Ring, Super Mario Brothers, or Phantasy Star, join our community Discord, our forums at cartridgeclub.org, or follow us on Twitter at cartridgeclubna. We love seeing the hashtag cartridgeclub used whenever you talk about one of the games we've selected. I'm Church, and on behalf of our rotating pool of hosts, I'd like to thank you for tuning in. On behalf of the entire Cartridge Club community, I'd like to give a huge shout out to our Patreon Club backers, Ross Rengo, Joel Boyce, Kevin from Canadian Grooves, Bass Guy, Dean Lasagna from Round 2 Gaming, and Caleb J. Ross, as well as the rest of the Cartridge Club Patreon supporters. Thank you. April's Game of the Month is our introduction to Lara Croft with the iconic original release of Tomb Raider. Joining me to talk about Tomb Raider is Curtis Friesel.
Hey, how you doing, Church?
And Daniel Radmer.
Hello.
I'm glad you're here.
It's good to be here, man. But I think it's especially good for Dan, because this is his first podcast on the Cartridge Club, right?
Yes. It's not only my first Cartridge Club podcast, my first podcast ever. You guys are breaking my cherry.
Yay.
Wow. I'm honored, Dan.
I'm honored to be here.
All right. So let's just kind of cover a little Tomb Raider background here. So Tomb Raider is a 1996 action-adventure video game developed by Core Design and published by Eidos Interactive. It was first released on the Sega Saturn, followed shortly by the MS-DOS versions and PlayStation 1. Following the release of Tomb Raider, Lara Croft herself became a gaming icon, seeing unprecedented media cross-promotion. These included commercials for cars and foodstuffs, an appearance on the cover of The Face, and requests for sponsorships from outside companies. This culminated in a pair of blockbuster movies released in 2001 and 2003, starring Angelina Jolie, and a whole slew of other games, and another movie as well. So we got a note in here about Lara Fever from the time. Did you guys get into Lara Fever?
1,000%. Yes. I was so into Tomb Raider at the time. You know, I was thinking about it this morning before we got on here. I was like trying to remember how I discovered Tomb Raider. And for the life of me, I don't remember. It's weird. It just feels like it was always a part of my life, you know? I played it on PS1. So, you know, it would have been 97, 98, maybe when I first discovered Tomb Raider. I was actually, when you were reading the info stuff, I was surprised that it was first released on the Sega Saturn. I didn't know that. That was interesting to me. I just always assumed it came. I knew it came out on I thought it was computer first and then like Saturn and PlayStation at the same
time. Yeah, same.
So that was interesting. But yeah, Lara Fever, 1,000%.
How about you, Dan?
Yes, I'm pretty old. So I was actually, I remember when this game first came out. I remember we didn't really have the internet back then in our house. So the way we discovered games like this was through the magazines at the grocery store. So I would go to the grocery store with my mother. And she would go shopping, and I would go straight to the magazine section. And every magazine, every video game magazine had Lara Croft's face on the cover. And that's kind of how I discovered the game. When it was coming out, there was a lot of hype leading up to it. And I got it right away for the Sega Saturn.
Yeah, for me, it was... I don't remember exactly. I had a friend that had a decent PC at the time. And essentially what I would do is I'd go over and hang out at his place. I'd bring over my Super Nintendo, and later I'd bring over my PlayStation, and he would go over and play those, and I'd play games on his PC. And he seemed to have all the hits from the time. And one day he's like, yeah, I got this cool game, Tomb Raider, check it out. And like, it pretty much blew my mind, you know, early 3D gaming as robust as that was. And then throwing in this attractive female lead that was somewhat unprecedented at the time, just hooked me right from there. I was easily allured as a young gamer. So
it's funny looking back how that really blocky polygonal form of Lara Croft is hailed in such high regard as like the first like video game sex symbol, you know, like this really just like everything about it is so basic and it's all angles and, you know, it's ridiculous. But yeah, man, for any of you people out there that weren't there in the 90s when Lara Croft first burst on the scene, I mean, that was you don't understand. That was it. When Dan's saying, you know, that it's all over the magazines and stuff, it absolutely was. It you couldn't go anywhere without seeing Lara Croft. It was pretty wild.
I know, especially in like Europe, like as like a media sensation, like, you know, they had all the Lara models and,
oh yeah,
selling car, like high end cars, like, you know, fancy cars and stuff, just all over commercials, like huge. I don't really remember as much advertising with her here in the States, but later on I'd heard like how big she was, especially in Europe. It's kind of interesting, and it could be because of, as the character, her origins are European, so.
Right.
I might be in the minority here, but I actually didn't really care about the character. I just wanted a really good game to be entertained by. It was just coincidental that Lara was this big figure. I just wanted to play the game.
Yeah. I've always been a sucker for attractive characters in media. Like how I got into comic books was entirely based after like one very attractive cover of a comic book, and it's like, I'm in.
Which one? Come on, which one?
So I saw the cover of the first issue of Vengeance of Vampirella, which, you know, she's attractive. She's like laying in blood, and I was like, I was in sixth grade when I saw that, and I was like, hey, Dad, I want to go to the comic book store.
Yeah, yeah.
but for Tomb Raider, it was large. I mean, it was entirely because it was a video game at the time, especially as like any video game access I could get to. But yeah, going back as you mentioned, like the allure and sex appeal of Lara Croft at the time was pretty wild. And I sort of remember that too. And looking at her character model today, it's like, it's nothing special really, but considering that there wasn't any really that many female leads in games at the time, it's kind of funny. And there's always this apparently in development, when it came to like her like bust size, apparently that was an accident. Like the guy said he flubbed a slider and
made it too big.
Yeah, made it too big. And kind of looking at her now, it's like it doesn't seem beyond anything normal.
If anything, it felt like they pushed that slider a little bit more in later releases, you know. Yes. More like current gen ones, like since they've done the remake and stuff, they've definitely toned that down. But oh man, for a while it felt like inching a little bit bigger every video game.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick here, I just want to kind of read the back of the box description just to see how they are advertising this. So the game itself follows the adventures of archaeologist Lara Croft. The back of the box leads off with the headline, "Sometimes a killer body isn't enough." Going with that, you know, sexy taglines, I guess, is how they're really pushing it. And I know that was a big IDOS thing. So the rest of the box reads, "Climb, swim, and backflip your way through a maze of cryptic death traps. So realistic, you can practically smell the decaying flesh. Unload an arsenal of lethal firepower on any wild dog, giant lizard, bloodthirsty mercenary that gets in your way. Your mission is the deadliest one to date, to recover the recovery of the fabled scion, an incredible treasure reputed to give its possessor vast power. Get ready to cross the globe to take on impossible odds while exploring Incan ruins, ancient Rome, Egyptian pyramids, and the lost city of Atlantis. Explore four massive worlds with over 15 levels. Your arsenal includes pistols, magnums, a shotgun, and Uzis. Battle wolves, bats, bears, alligators, raptors, and even a T-Rex in your quest for the Scion. So, disregarding the description I just read, how would you describe the original Tomb Raider to somebody who's never played it?
Dan, you want to take the lead on that one?
Sure. I would just describe it as kind of a trailblazer for action adventure video games. There's a lot of things that you see in Tomb Raider that still their influence is resonating today. Just really basic things too, like locking on with your guns, like finding keys, solving puzzles, pushing blocks, all that kind of thing. You may have encountered a few of these elements in some other games prior to Tomb Raider, but Tomb Raider is really where it all came together into one cohesive unit. I know a lot of people say this game hasn't necessarily aged very well, but I still love it. And even back then, back when it first came out, I knew this is groundbreaking. This is amazing. And it's just a game that everyone has to play. Even if you don't like it, at least play it.
Who says it hasn't aged well? What do they know?
Right?
Yeah. And, you know, that was a great description. The only thing I would add, like my most recent playthrough, the thing that I found that I was like, wow, it shares a lot of elements with like survival horror games. I found like my blood got pumping so much at different points throughout the film. And I think that has a lot to do with like the atmosphere. Like it's very quiet. The use of music is very sparse. I know we'll talk about that later on, but there's all these like things that just like that work so well together. And I like my most recent playthrough, I was just like, all I remember is my heart pumping so much the entire time, whether it be like when the T-Rex first appears or like later on when you're in these like caves and you don't know when something's going to pop out at any moment. Like it's scary or underwater when like you see your breath meter just like slowly depleting and you're like, where is the stupid lever I'm supposed to pull to open the door? You know, it's crazy, crazy. So yeah, I would actually like describe it as like a pseudo survival horror game, you know, as well as adventure and all that.
Yeah, it definitely has some of those vibes. I feel like Tomb Raider doesn't get enough credit for what it did at the time, being one of the early 3D platformers. Everybody always, you know, everybody always jumps Ocarina and Super Mario 64 and did all these things. So did Tomb Raider and a lot more even. But to just, if I was describing it to somebody who kind of knew gaming throughout the ages, it's largely like a Indiana Jones inspired 3D Prince of Persia. Like it took very heavily off of kind of the Prince of Persia gameplay, even with like how the start and stopping moves, it's like it's a little slippery, or not slippery, but there's a momentum mm-hmm. with that. And
that is spot on. I agree. Like Indiana Jones meets Prince of Persia is perfect. Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah, and describing it to somebody like who's maybe like a newer gamer, like that's kind of a tougher one. It's action adventure game when you're exploring, climbing. I mean, I guess if I was explaining it to somebody today, I'd be like early, you know, because people probably know Uncharted and the current Tomb Raider games, but it's really like distill that down to very basics, yeah, where you're just exploring, a little bit of climbing, a little platforming, a little bit of puzzling, and a little bit of fighting.
It's like Uncharted in slow motion.
Yeah.
You know, Uncharted is so whiz-bang action, and Tomb Raider is much more deliberate and take your time, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So as far as how we all originally played, so Dan, you did Saturn, Curtis, you were PlayStation original 1. PlayStation.
I actually remembered a little bit as you were talking about it. So at the time when Tomb Raider was out, I lived in an apartment building, and my mom's friend at the time, his name was Mouse. That was like his nickname. We called him Mouse. He, when we would come home from school, he was home. Like he worked the late shift or something. So he was always home. So we would kind of go hang out at his place, you know, before our parents got home and stuff and all of our friends. And he had a PlayStation, And so I have so many fond memories of, and I'm pretty sure this is how I discovered Tomb Raider, because I remember playing Resident Evil at his place. I remember playing Twisted Metal, Tomb Raider, and I'm, this must have been where I discovered Tomb Raider, because we would come there after school every day and, you know, play a level or two, get as far as we could. And we're all figuring it out together, you know, like, where do you go? Look over here, do that. Pretty sure that's where I was introduced to Tomb Raider.
For me, like I said, my first access was the original PC version. I don't know if I ever played that to completion, but then once I figured, I think it was a couple years later, it came out on PlayStation 1. Can't remember exactly when the PlayStation 1 release was, but once it was released on PlayStation 1, I was like, oh, I gotta have this. Like, that was so exciting to be able to have that game at home versus at my friend's house. A lot of times we do community impressions and three-word reviews. So we got a bunch of three-word reviews this time, and I decided instead of doing them all at the end of the podcast, we're going to break them up a little bit. So we're going to take our first three-word reviews, and Dan, if you wouldn't mind reading those for us.
All right. So our first three-word review, I'm totally going to butcher this person's name. It's either VR or VR45.
VR45.
Incredibly VR. Incredibly elongated playtime. And then Captain Algebra says, great first adventure. OA Retro Gamer says, jank as F. I agree with one of those.
they're all kind of fair points in their own ways. But yeah, so always, as always, thank you for participating and sharing your community thoughts with the game. Everybody, keep it up. You can always use more of that. Okay, so let's go into some gameplay and graphics discussion. Kind of talked about, you know, some of the backgrounds of the character and whatnot, but let's go into some gameplay. So there's a lot. I think there's a lot going on with this game. Kind of simple compared to today's standards, but I think we've just had so much exposure over the years and knowing kind of where things originated from, I think this game did a lot. So let's talk about gameplay a little bit compared to, like I already mentioned, kind of like that Prince of Persia style, long jumping and pitfalls and climbing. How does this take that to the next level, I guess? Like how did this introduce 3D gaming to people who at the time might have not had much experience with 3D gaming?
Well, one thing that sticks out to me is, you know, before the PlayStation, you know, there was the Super Nintendo, the like 16-bit generation, right? And on the Super Nintendo controller, for instance, you got, what, 8 buttons? Very basic is what I'm going for. Not a lot of buttons that you use. And often you would only use like the D-pad and 2 buttons, maybe Y and B or A and B, whatever it is. Jump ahead to Tomb Raider. You got the PlayStation controller. Now you got an R1, R2, L1, L2. The original PlayStation has 2 shoulder buttons, right? Or did it just have the 1?
Yeah, it's 2. Yep.
It has a 2. Yeah. So, and then you got the squares, triangle, all that jazz. You use every single button on the PlayStation controller. And it is super meticulous, like the controls of this game. That's if there's one thing that you got to get past when you play this game, it's learning the controls, because it is very different from a lot of other games at the time. And like you said, very slow, methodical. It's like that Prince of Persia, and it is very precise. There's not a lot of room for error while you're playing this game. You know, it mentioned when you're reading the back, like, backflip, you know, jump, backflip. Yeah, you're going to be backflipping a lot. And I can't think of a lot of games that like force you to do backflips. I can think of a specific moment in Tomb Raider where there's like a boulder, and the only way you're going to outrun it and get out of the way is like as soon as it clicks off and like releases and starts chasing after you, you got to do like that backflip roll thing and start running the other direction right away. You absolutely have to do that. Otherwise, you're going to die. So yeah, that description was very apt. You are going to be backflipping that. And then more traditional like backflip where you actually jump backwards, you know, and do the huge thing. Yeah, the controls are, there's a learning curve for Tomb Raider for sure. But if you can get past that, and I feel like it once you get past the learning curve of the controllers, it feels easy somehow. You know, it's very different, but once your brain kind of locks in on what you're supposed to do, I have zero problems with it. I become like an acrobatic master in this game.
Yeah. You
know, and I love it personally. I think the controls are really fun.
Yeah. And for anybody who might be like watching the YouTube version as we're talking about this, like, I apologize. It took me a little while to get reacquainted with the controls. So the first couple levels are probably going to be looking a little sloppy. But if I went back after completing the game and re-record those first levels, like, I'd look like a wizard. Because yeah, once you get that down, you can keep that going. So Dan, what are your thoughts on controls?
Yeah, so I think the controls are probably the biggest hurdle if you're introducing a new person to this game. Someone might play this game for 5 minutes and say, I can't control Laura. This is crap. Or one of those three-word reviews, jank as F, kind of comes into play here. There is definitely a learning curve. You can't just, you know, use your controller pad and move Laura wherever on the screen. You have to turn her. If you tip forward, she takes a couple steps forward. That'll result in you, like, falling over ledges and that kind of things and plummeting to your death if you're not careful. You really have to be careful. Hold down that walk button so you don't fall off any ledges. Line up your jumps. You really have to time everything out perfectly, at least at first. By the time I got to the end of this game, I was running and not lining up any of my jumps and just, you know, kind of winging it and all that stuff, and everything was perfect. But there's definitely that learning curve, and luckily this game gives you a nice tutorial to start with. The Mansion.
Yeah, The Mansion, which is a really neat inclusion. I don't think many games at the time did much of a tutorial, let alone giving it a full level, which is pretty neat. They ran with the tutorial stage with the other games too. Like, they expanded on her house, and there's the whole famous lock in the butler and the freezer thing. And
the second game for me is like the peak for the mansion thing, because they really like up the ante in that one. But yeah, very cool. Like, just to be able to go around and like practice, you know, it's like if you're playing like Mortal Kombat or whatever, and they give you the training option. That's essentially what that is, you know. And this game is so platform heavy. Like, if I would put this up against any 3D platformer all the time and say, this is like the most purest platformer. Like, you are doing some serious platforming in this game, even more than Mario or Zelda or any of those. It's intense. And so you almost need that training stage.
And I had forgotten how bare bones this mansion was. Like, I'm remembering the subsequent games. Like,
yeah,
there's rooms to explore and secrets to find. In this game, there's really not much except for that training room. And also, you see lots of weird boxes and crates stacked up in the hallway. I'm not sure if this is Tomb Raider canon or anything, but is this where she's just moving into the mansion?
Could be.
That's a good question.
I don't think so, because I think throughout the lore, this is just Croft Manor, which is like was her father's or her family's or whatever. But maybe they did that just to try to fill it a little bit more. It's been a while since I'd played original Tomb Raider, like quite a while. And yeah, I thought there was a little bit more to it, but didn't really need to be for what they were doing.
And does anybody remember the rumor about being able to turn Laura nude in the mansion?
I don't remember that exactly, but I'm pretty sure when I fired up Tomb Raider, my friend was like, hey, did you know there's a nude code?
Yeah.
It was called Nude Raider at the time.
Yeah. That was such a big, you know, schoolyard rumor. I don't remember it being connected to the mansion. I just remember it being connected to the game. And yeah, I remember in those early days of the internet, like scouring all the search engines, Ask Jeeves and Yahoo and all that stuff, trying to find, like, well, what is the nude? How come nobody has this nude code?
The funny, like, methods you had to do that people would just make up. Like, oh, you gotta backflip 10 times, shoot your gun, yeah. Roll.
So the specific rumor that I had heard is that right by the swimming pool, there's this little stationary fountain. And if you jumped and landed on it at just the right angle, Laura's clothes would disappear. And even though I said before I didn't really care about her or her looks or whatever, I cared about the game. That did not stop me from trying this about 50,000 times. I had tried to line up and jump on that little fountain so many times, and it just never happened. And you know, little 15-year-old me was heartbroken.
Yeah, yeah. And for anybody curious, all it was is it was a patch. For the PC version, it was the only way you could do this. It was a patch that you just download and just reskinned her chest to look like skin, basically. And
so there actually was something.
There was a patch
to it.
Yeah, somebody modded the game way back then. Modders, man. Wow. And they still do it today.
I specifically remember being at my cousin's house, and it, like, the adults were out and we had access to the computer, and I was like, all right, let's go find this nude code. let's put it in or whatever. And I remember searching, and like, we're just not coming up with anything. And then we kind of just gave up, and we just looked up, nude pictures for the Spice Girls.
There you go. Oh yeah, those were the days.
The 90s, people. It was a crazy time.
Yes, it was.
You gotta take what you can get.
So as you guys both mentioned, like, controlling, this goes back to our it seems like either you love it or hate it. People call it, these days they call it tank controls, and for some people they just never seem to like click for them. It just, but for me, I never really had issues with tank controls. In fact, I'm not being contrarian to, you know, popular discourse, but I've always liked tank controls. I always thought they were effective, you know, and especially, and it probably helps going back to my love for original survival horror games, Resident Evil, Silent Hill, like, once you just understood the basics, it just kind of clicked. But yeah, she has a, in the game there, I mean, compared to other 3D games or platformers, like, I don't think there is the amount of actions you could do. You know, by default, she runs. You can have her walk. She does climb. You can shimmy. There's a roll turn, which is just like she somersaults forward and turns around. Do that. Can you do that in the air too? I can't remember if you can jump
not
and flip and turn around. Okay, not in this one.
I think that's introduced later, right?
Yeah, for some reason I can't remember. She has a sidestep. You can look, like a free look. She swims. I'm not sure if the dive was... So one of the programmers is just like, I'm just going to do a move or two for fun, and I'm not even going to tell the team, and he like threw it in. Mainly her handstand when you're climbing, if you hold... if you're doing the PlayStation 1 version, if you hold R1 while you're pulling yourself up on a ledge, she'll actually like do this like handstand thing and then kind of like flip over. Looks awesome. Entirely was unnecessary, but somebody took the time to program it and throw it in the game, which I think just added to everything that Tomb Raider was, especially with the style. And then, yeah, she also has a dive. You can just jump into the water normally, or you can do like a full on dive, which when you do that from high heights, like, it's just looks so cool. Or sometimes you just want to mess around and you're like, oh, I need to just restart the last checkpoint and dive off a cliff and kill yourself, right? Or something. I did that plenty of times. So basic controls, the game's very, as we said, it's very heavy on platforming, exploration. They kind of throw into these areas and you make your way around. But besides the challenges of the precise platforming that, as you guys have mentioned, really requires you to understand the controls, there's also an assortment of enemies throughout the game and combat. So what did you guys think of the combat? How did this game handle that? Do you think it did a good job? you needed some work?
I remember at the time I very first played this game being a little disappointed in the combat. Like, I think I wanted the ability to aim on my own and, you know, blow away my enemies, and as opposed to just having the camera lock onto them and then you hold the shoot button. To me, that seemed a little too easy for me. But over the years, I've come to really like the combat. I like the jumping around and flipping to avoid enemy shots while you're shooting at them. And, you know, it's quite hectic at times. It's a lot of fun. I've grown on it.
I'm not a big fan of the combat in this game. It's tough. It doesn't quite gel with the controls that well. I am super grateful for the auto aiming because that really helps. But sometimes you'll get in situations where you're in a tight space. Like I remember, I think it's in Greece, I think, when there's the gorillas and you'll be walking through like a hallway, a tiny hallway, and like a gorilla will pop out from nowhere. And gorillas take a lot to like put down, and you're in close quarters and you're like aiming all wonky and the camera's going everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So and there's really no way to fix it. You just have to kind of be able to anticipate these things and jump out of the way or, you know, run away and get into an open area where you can fight. Luckily, though, the combat isn't a huge part of the game. I think they balance it really well, like the exploration versus combat. Because to me, it's all about the exploration. That's what I love about the game. Mm-hmm. And they keep the combat. They give you that like jolt of energy just when you need it in the levels. And then they kind of pull it back. They don't overwhelm you with it, which I really appreciate. But yeah, as far as the controls in the combat, they could be better.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the developers had issues with how the combat turned out because, you know, they set up these encounters and all you got to do is really just find the nearest ledge and just hop up on the ledge. And you can, once you're locked onto an enemy, as long as they don't go out of view, they can go pretty far away. You can still shoot them from a distance.
Mm.
But at the time when I originally played this, like I thought it was so cool. Dual pistols. I mean, it doesn't get any cooler than dual pistols. And you can jump around and do flips. And that was how I had to kind of cope with the jank of the combat is I never found an effective way to like deal with like some of the human NPCs who had guns as well. Only way I knew how to try to avoid getting shot is just flip all over the place while shooting. But it, fortunately it wasn't the focus. Also shout out to the whole fact that you can holster and unholster your guns. Like,
yeah.
How many games can you do that in today? Like, it was so cool back then. This game pioneered so many things. I love it.
Yeah.
It's great. It's great.
So my strategy for fighting human enemies was pretty effective when I was a kid, and it's still effective now. I would just run towards them while shooting, and then as soon as I'd pass them, flip around and just continue shooting. And it takes them a while to turn around and lock back onto you. So I would just run past them, flip, run past them, flip, run past them, flip. And before you know it, they're dead or running away.
That's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd probably work a lot better than what I was doing. And but, when you're flipping around and shooting stuff, and you got to deal with that camera, like switching around all the time on its own too.
But that's how I actually, you were talking about how it'll stay locked on for a long time. That's how I killed the T-Rex is like, if you run past the T-Rex when you first get to it, there's like a little temple thing or whatever at the end of the stage that you need to go find whatever is in there. And you can hop up where like the T-Rex can't quite get to you. And just, I just stayed locked on and bam, 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 bam. And then, you know, kill the T-Rex with pistols. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So I guess with the combat, we got our enemies. So a T-Rex, come on. That was awesome. And it kind of throws in that little bit of that survival horror is I'm sure a lot of people jumped into this game. And you're like, oh, I'm doing Indiana Jones stuff and I'm just climbing and oh, there's some wolves, but then you go into this big, this valley and it's got waterfalls and a big broken bridge and
it's early.
Yeah,
that's like level 3 that they introduced the T-Rex. Like they come out guns blazing on that one, you know.
How awesome was that?
Yeah.
That, even though it says it on the back of the box, it still caught me by surprise when it happened too.
Yeah. And it's scary because it's like dark in that valley and it just kind of like comes out of nowhere, this like giant T-Rex, you know. That's the other thing about this game I love is all of the environments are seem massive. They're huge. These huge open areas. And it's like the deeper you get into the game, like there's that level in Egypt where there's like the Sphinx, like an underground Sphinx or whatever. And it's just it's huge, huge. Love it.
Yeah. And the back of the box kind of mentions some of the enemies, but it gets like kind of progressively crazier as you go on. You know, you got your basic animals, wolves, bears, bats. Then they throw in the T-Rex. There's raptors. We got a bunch of human enemies.
Gorillas.
Gorillas. Cougars. Rats.
Alligators.
Alligators. And then the end of the game.
Yeah, like the muscle monsters or whatever.
What are those
like
things?
Mummies or centaurs and gargoyles. Like that was one of my favorite parts in the game. Like kind of playing through this and it's very grounded and all of a sudden you get into all the supernatural and it's like, I did not expect that. And most of the point throughout the game, like you'd never had pre-warning when you're going to deal with enemies. So now all of a sudden you have like these like zombie things coming at you out of nowhere and they shoot fireballs and it's crazy. It's crazy. It's awesome.
And it's weird. Like that's another survival horror thing. Like the end of the game in Atlantis, and sorry if we're jumping ahead, but like it's all like muscle and like sinew and the environments are just like gross, you know?
So cool. I remember playing through those levels back when I was a kid and just being like, this is the coolest. Cause yes. I was horror obsessed as a kid and it's like, I did not expect this.
And I will say like the MacGuffin itself, the Scion or whatever, kind of dumb. Like the story itself of the game, like I have played Tomb Raider a million times and I don't think I could tell you the story of the game right now. Like I was reading your explanation of like what the plot is. And I was like, oh, like, yeah, I guess so. Like you don't care about the MacGuffin, this Scion, yeah. this ring thing that they're after or whatever. Like it doesn't matter, but you know, that's just the want of the characters. That's like what drives this story forward is that they're going for that. But it really, I've never thought, you know, it holds nothing to like the Ark of the Covenant and Indiana Jones or, you know, the Grail, the Holy Grail or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of a weak MacGuffin, but Atlantis is cool.
Yeah.
You know,
while we're talking about the combat, we should talk about the weapons as well.
Yeah.
So early on in the game, you find a shotgun. I found this weapon to be pretty effective, especially for my playstyle, where I run in real close to the enemies and then flip. Takes most enemies down in just a couple of shots. I really like that. Unfortunately, I'm an ammo hoarder, so I ended the game with like 50 shotgun shells when I could have been using them all game long. And it was basically like that for every weapon in the game.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Somehow I missed the shotgun early on in the game, like because you get it in like level 2 or something from the guy, right? Somehow I missed it, and I didn't get it until way late. You can get it again, like way later in the game. Yeah. And so I was like double pistoling it for most of the game, which is not fun or easy when you get to some of the more like once you get to the gorillas, like it takes forever to kill a gorilla with the dual pistols.
Yeah. No, yeah, same here. For some reason, I don't remember this happening to me in the past, but this playthrough, I missed the shotgun and the Uzis.
Oh, yeah. No.
But then later in the game, you can get them all when you deal with some human enemies. As long as you're looking for secrets and whatnot, I think they cover you pretty well with ammo. If you're not getting all those secrets, I can see it being a little bit of a struggle.
Especially with the med packs. Like,
yes.
If you're not looking for the secrets, you'll be low on med packs. And that really makes a difference because you need some of those med packs. Some enemies do so much damage.
For sure.
Especially at the end of the game.
Yeah.
There's some enemies that'll take off half of your entire hit bar in just one hit. So you got to have a big stack of first aid to use.
That was what I found myself in this last playthrough, the like always running out of was the med packs.
Yeah, this time I do remember that being a big issue for me when I originally played the game, but this time I was just like, seemed like I was just swimming in med packs.
Well, you're such a pro, Church. You're
I guess. Yeah. I'm just that good. So we got our exploration. We got our platforming. Puzzles. So puzzles is a component or element of the game. Then puzzles might be a strong word sometimes, where it's more, hey, you just got to go find the switch and this block. But especially in the second half of the game, puzzles kind of become like the bread and butter of getting through levels. How'd you guys feel about that portion of the game?
I like the puzzles a lot. A lot of the puzzles, I didn't catch this the first time through, but they're really, really clever. For example, the Midas blocks, where you have to turn the bricks into gold.
Oh, yeah.
That is probably my favorite stage going back and playing this game again. And how you have to unlock the doors with the switches. There's symbols on the door that look like a little Quake symbol with a Y next to it, and assemble all of those blocks and turn them into gold. I thought that was great. There's other puzzles like the cistern where you're raising the water levels. I did not like that one as much.
Yeah.
but, you know, later on in Egypt, when you're exploring and finding the keys and unlocking that Sphinx, it's all really brilliant stuff here. There's basic puzzles too, like just find the key and open the door. There's the T-Rex level where you're finding all the cogs to turn a machine that opens up a dam that allows you to swim through things. It's all very, very clever. And, you know, even though this game is, what, 30 years old almost, it still stands up definitely today.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The puzzles, very fun. Some of them are tough. Like that Midas one, that was one of the few times that I legitimately had to look it up online. I was like, wow, what? I couldn't remember what you were supposed to do. And I could not figure it out. I knew it was something to do with that, but I just couldn't figure it out. I had to look it up.
Yeah. I remember originally when I played through that level, like I had no idea what I was supposed to do. And I'm pretty sure it was a complete accident where I just jumped on the hand, which is one of the, again, this throw like out of nowhere, there's like nothing really else like this in the game where they do these like extra like death animations, but there's a Midas hand, you jump on it, Lara turns to gold, falls over, you're dead.
Brilliant.
And that could have, maybe they did, well, this is going to be our clue for people. You know, you're getting these iron bars. If Lara jumps on here, you turn to gold. Subtle hint, maybe?
Awesome. And I like level, that though. Like they don't hold your hand. So many games today hold your hand too much, where there's no like thought to it, you know, like you're not having to figure it out. They're just spoon feeding you what you're supposed to do. And like a game like Tomb Raider, there are some things you really gotta, you know, figure it out. Like, you gotta sit there and like, what do I do? Where am I supposed to go? How do I, you know, where is this lever? Like, you know, even swimming, like the cistern thing, you only got so much air. You might have to kind of, okay, you're thinking about the map. Where have I gone? Where haven't I gone? How am I going to do this in the amount of time that I have breath? Like, you might have to find a ledge, just kind of sit there for a second and figure it out. I love that. I love that. I don't love the cistern level. You're right. Any level where it's like one of the Zeldas on 64. I can't remember if it's Majora's Mask or Ocarina where that you have to raise the levels. It's like the same thing. Ocarina. Is that Ocarina? Yeah. Oh yeah. Majora's Mask is where you got the current. That always dumb. I don't get this through your head, game developers. Like nobody likes that. It's stupid raising water levels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because I never had a problem with Ocarina of Time's Water Temple, but the cistern in Tomb Raider just gives me fits every single time.
Yeah. Well, because these levels are so big and there's so many rooms and so many passageways that you're like to remember all of these things. It's tough, you know? And then when you figure out whatever the solution was, you're like, oh, of course it's right over there. Like, I just forgot that there was a door over there.
One other thing to make all this all the more challenging is the assortment of traps throughout these levels. I mean, you can't have something like Indiana Jones inspired or Prince of Persia without having your pitfalls. And There's a good amount of them. You already mentioned boulders. Spikes is a big one.
One of my favorites. Before falling out. I love the grease levels. Like when you got like the like Thor and Neptune and all that, all of the traps that are specific to that, like God or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I always thought that was great. Like the Thor one where you can get like struck by lightning, you know, and you got to like run through.
There's then a giant hammer falls.
Yeah, the giant, the hammer. Oh, that one was great. Like such a, because if I remember right, you don't, unless you look up to see it or whatever, you don't really see it, but you'll hear like a click if you set it off, like, and then you're like, the heck was that? And then all of a sudden, like this hammer, so great. And yeah. Then like the Atlas one is what I was talking about before with like the boulder rolling down where you got to backflip and spin around and do all this crap. Yeah, really fun. Love the traps. You know what I hate is lava.
Yeah.
Lava, when you get towards the end of the game and you start getting all the lava stuff, that sucks. That is the hardest part of the game is dealing with the lava. And I can't remember. I think it's when you're in the mines, if I'm not mistaken, where there is a huge platforming part with lots of lava. And it's massive. Hated that. That's kind of like a trap lava, right? You know?
Yeah. And then there's lava flows too in a few places.
Yeah.
Where
there's a hallway where with some health items in it and you stop like, oh, I'm going to pick up these health items. And then you're roasted alive.
It's a trap.
And there's a part where like it's coming from both sides and you kind of have to like weave through it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Fun stuff. Yeah, and then one other thing we didn't mention too much is with the exploration and whatnot, there's a lot of moving blocks around, push-pull mechanic, which is really neat. You know, give her different animations for that. Just they keep things very, for the time especially, I think, is very diverse with gameplay, different elements. You're not just doing the same thing over and over. I mean, in the end, it's all climbing and pushing and pulling or whatnot, but just kind of mixing it up.
Now I'm a little slow, but I actually didn't realize in that grease level that all those mini stages were themed after gods. Like I didn't realize that until my current playthrough, and I've played this game dozens of times. I'm like, wait, an electrified floor and a big hammer that falls? Oh, there's Thor on the door. I get it now. Neptune and swimming. I get it now. It's funny. It took me like 15 playthroughs of this game to finally understand that.
Yeah. And then the only other big gameplay element we haven't touched on yet is the save system, which, you know, it's definitely not a huge point of the game, but there are some differences for the save system between versions of the game, primarily just the PC version and the Saturn and PS1 version. PC version, you can save anytime you want.
Really?
No restrictions whatsoever. So I think it makes the game a lot easier.
Yes.
Instead of like dying over and over and having to like retrace your routes and do all this puzzling again and platforming to get back to the same place that keeps killing you.
Yeah.
Which there's a term called save scumming. And this was like, that's exactly what it is. It's like, you can just set up your saves, get to, you know, the exact jump that you want to do, save right there, minimal downtime, which I kind of feel bad because I took full advantage of that because I played through the PC version this time. Made the game a lot easier, I would say.
I had that.
But you still got to do the work.
That lava part I was talking about. Oh my, that took me forever. And it's like, you have to start it over every time.
Yeah. Ugh.
I believe they fixed this for Tomb Raider 2. You can save at any point. But then in Tomb Raider 3, they go back to the crystals again.
Bastard.
Even though you can keep them in your inventory and use them whenever you want. You still just have a limited amount of saves.
Right.
Let's talk about the graphics then. Talked a little bit about, you know, Lara's sex appeal and whatnot, but and the polygons, it's all about the polygons. What do you guys think about how the game looked for the time? How does it hold up today?
I think it looks good for the time. I mean, like I said, these giant worlds and yeah, I didn't really have a problem with that. I think the the pixely nature of it kind of works for and against it sometimes, because stuff blends in so much with other things. You'll sometimes miss, oh, that's an opening that you can climb into. Like, it looks like from the right angle, it just looks like a wall. But then you go over and you're like, oh, like, I didn't even see you could get up in there. Like, this happened. I remember specifically in the where the T-Rex is in that valley, there was like one cog I couldn't find. And I'm like, I went everywhere. Like, where the heck am I missing this? And it was as simple as there was just a little place that was hidden that I didn't realize you could climb up and go and get the cog. So that's an example of like that working for, like, working against you. But in a way, like, it's kind of like good too, because it kind of forces you to go around and double check everything. And, you know, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I would change it really, because it's hidden. Well, I don't know, you know, but I love this game so much. Like, I can forgive those things.
I agree with that. I love the game so much too, I don't even really notice the graphics anymore, but you do kind of have to take the good with the bad. I remember getting this game even when it first came out and being like, some of this is kind of ugly. Like, especially in the early levels, you look at some of the walls and it's just like a pixelated mess. Like, what is that supposed to be? Vines, a bush? I don't know what that is. There's some weird, like, 2D objects in the 3D environment. Again, going back to the beginning, in that very first stage, there's like a pillar of skulls or something very early in the stage. And I remember thinking, well, this has got to be something. I've got to be able to interact with this or pick something up or shoot it or something. And I just remember spending an hour trying to figure out what to do with these skulls that were just part of the decoration that didn't even matter. But yeah, there's some slowdown. You can kind of like see through walls, like there's some clipping. Like if you do the spin around maneuver when you're near a wall, the game kind of goes crazy for a second or two. I played this game originally on the Saturn, and the Saturn version is definitely the ugliest of all of the versions of this game. I kind of switched over to the PS1 version as I was playing, and it was night and day difference. Not that the Saturn version looks bad, it just kind of has this grainy quality to it almost, a kind of dirty quality. I don't know. Maybe that works good because they're in tombs, so it's supposed to be grainy and dirty, but I prefer the PlayStation version. I'm sure the PC version looks better than that one too. I was playing the Saturn version when my three-year-old walked into the room, and he said, yucky, to like everything on the screen because it looks so gross. He was like, yucky grass, yucky vines. And I guess that's just an honest assessment from a three-year-old. But, you know, you do have to take the good with the bad as well. I'm able to appreciate like the giant levels, the atmosphere that it builds, how unique each level is in its presentation. So even though there are some nagging graphical qualms with the game, overall, I think it still looks really good, and I have no problems playing it today. I'm not a graphic snob.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Sure. As you mentioned, yeah, the PC version is like the better graphic version, but that's largely as years have gone by. So originally the Saturn, it was kind of like slight improvements. The Saturn version, the PS1 version was a little bit more higher fidelity, but you still had the jaggies. There was like not really straight lines so much for like character models and whatnot. And the MS-DOS version then kind of like got a little bit higher resolution. Again, kind of going to anybody watching the YouTube version of this, you'll see this is the PS1 the PC version that I was playing on. And this version, honestly, like, I think it looks fantastic. Like, everything is straight lines. There's no jaggies whatsoever. But at the same time, it almost looks too clean. And I've seen some discussion that it kind of takes away a little bit of the atmosphere, which that could be a eye of the beholder thing, but I always enjoy when people from the PC community can do things to enhance the games without changing them, all while at the same time, I think making it a little bit more accessible for some people who might get hung up on those sorts of things, which, you know, it's just the nature of the beast when it comes to video games. But the PC version I played, it's on Steam. I think you can get it on like GOG, but the Steam version, I also downloaded a patch that bumped up that resolution a little bit more. So there is an Android version of Tomb Raider that I think this patch that I used might have pulled the textures from the Android version, because like I said, Laura's all very straight lines. There's not much clipping or anything like that. Now the levels themselves, I don't think there's anything they can do about with some of those the clipping that was going on with walls and whatnot. It's just how the game was designed, which actually was, it was kind of cool. I was reading something about the development, and they were kind of struggling on how they could make this all work as they were coming up with the initial designs, trying their initial programming. Because at first they weren't going for like a grid-based gameplay design, which is entirely what Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3 definitely are like. Everything is grid-based. Your running and jumping is based on grids. The designs on grids, because it's all, you know, square polygons pretty much everywhere. And so as far as like what version I would recommend to people, I mean, I think the PlayStation 1 version's a really great version, but PC is great for accessibility. You can get the higher resolution. It's kind of like the flavor of retro you like.
Yeah.
And I know there are some other like minor differences. I'm not like 100% on them. Like I believe, and I could have tested this out before I like instantly modding this game when I downloaded the PC version, is I believe there's a difference in water effects, which was really cool. I mean, we had water effects.
Yeah.
Waterfalls and shimmering water, and a difference between when you're underwater, you kind of had that muffled sound, which was really neat. I believe the original MS-DOS version, the water might have been a little bit more just translucent, where I believe the PlayStation 1 version added a blue tint.
Yeah. Greeny blue, yeah.
Okay, cool. You know, which is an interesting change. It's like, well, I wonder why that's different.
I would assume it was so, you know, she didn't look like she was just kind of floating, you know, like it feels like you're in water rather than like, oh, I went through this weird thing where now I'm just like floating, you know, if it's the same. I don't know what the MS-DOS one looks like, but if it was, you know.
There's a few people who've done like comparison videos on YouTube, which was kind of interesting to see, like, which is funny too, because when I played this version on the PC, like, it's one of those things when you go back to these games, when they do like a remaster or something, it's like, that's how you remember the game. But then you actually look like side by side in the version I actually originally played, and it's like, whoa, okay, I don't remember it looking, you know, that.
Mm-hmm.
Rough, or that's not the right word, but like one thing that was really cool that I never really noticed before. So Lara has a facial expression change when she's shooting or not shooting. Like, she has a straight face normally, which you can't even really see on the original versions of the game, but she has a face. And when she fires her gun, she actually does this like grimace, kind of like angry looking. And I was like, oh, that was really cool.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know that.
I don't think I've noticed that.
Yeah, because the console versions is just kind of like a mush. Like, you can see that she has a face, but it's not super defined because, you know, they didn't have the resolution for it.
See, I can actually picture that grimace. Maybe they updated it for later Tomb Raider games, or maybe they use it during a cutscene or something, but I can picture what you're talking about.
Yeah. And again, just like extra flavor they added to this game that just did so much, I think. So let's jump into our second little round of three-word reviews. Curtis, if you wouldn't mind.
You got it. All right, so round two gaming says, fun but frustrating. I can get behind that.
I know he wasn't too thrilled on the momentum mechanics. Took him a while to get around that. for like the running and jumping.
I mean, yeah, that just goes back to the learning curve with everything, you know, because there is some hard jumps that you have to, like, you'll either jump too far or not far enough, you know. Mm-hmm. It's fun. A lot of deaths like that.
It's even worse when it's been a while since you've saved.
Oh, yes. God, I know. I'm going to go find a crystal before I make this jump. JJS Boyce says, edges, not curves. Another apt one. And Tesseract Unfold says, F tank controls. So, not a fan.
There's a lot of people that just don't like those tank controls. And yep, that's fine. We all have our preferences.
Yeah.
Okay, so story is definitely not the focus of the game per se, but I figured it'd be worth kind of talking about the story because they try to give you some motivation. They try to flesh this out and give us a little bit more than just basic gameplay, which was a lot of what retro gaming was. To Curtis, you said you didn't really follow too much. You didn't really catch too much from the story.
I don't think it really matters. You know, the one thing I will say about the story is we take for granted now, like, cinematic cutscenes and stuff in video games. But man, back in the day, like, this was so cool that it had cinematic cutscenes, and you so looked forward to getting to another one. You know, that was almost like a reward in and of itself. It's like, oh, I got to another cutscene, you know? And so I still get like the woo when I'm playing the game, you know. But the story itself, yeah, I couldn't tell you one character's name, you know. Story, I don't care. But again, I'm not playing it for the story, you know.
Sure.
The story is pretty good. I struggled to kind of remember what the story was about coming through it for my most recent playthrough, even though, like I said, I've played this game a dozen times. But it's good. It keeps you moving through the game. It gives you a reason to be at these locations that you're at, which really is all you need. I like how it kind of ties together at the end. I don't know if we're going to give a recap or anything, but the reveal on who Jacqueline Natla is and where she comes from, I thought at the time was pretty cool.
Yeah. So, no worries about spoilers at this point. I mean, this game's old enough, and I think those who care probably know, and if you don't care too much, it's totally fine. Honestly, kind of like the setup to the story of the game, a lot of people probably just skip right over because you have to kind of sit and let when you load up the game, you got to let it just play out, and that's your initial background. Which, if you don't know what's going on, it's like, what am I looking at? Mm-hmm. You see an explosion, and then a thing flies out and crashes in the ground, and then like some chamber opens up, and there's a person. It's like, what the heck is all of this? And essentially, like, the gist of the story is there is it goes all the way back to when Atlantis was a thing, and there is some power dynamic issue, or they didn't like what Natla was doing at the time, so they ended up like, we don't like what you're doing, we're going to seal you away. And I'm not exactly sure how she gets out, how that caused that.
I think maybe my initial impression, I don't know if this is correct or not, is that there was nuclear testing. Like, this was off in some remote area, and just the nuclear bomb jarred her loose from her
computer. That's right.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yep. So she comes back and she kind of disguises herself as just a regular person, contacts Lara to go out hunting for pieces of the Scion. You know, in most, if you've played enough Tomb Raider games, you always know there's going to be a double cross. That kind of happens in any of your like Indiana Jones movies, even, like, he's always double crossed by the guy we think would be his guy. And then it just kind of goes bonkers at the end with, as Curtis mentioned, the living, kind of like the living levels when you get to Atlantis, whatever that is going on. It's pretty grotesque.
One thing I like about this game's story is that it gives a reason why people are looking for these treasures at the same time. A lot of issues that I have with similar things like this, Indiana Jones, Tomb Raider, is that you have this treasure that's been sitting there for thousands and thousands of years. And then, just coincidentally, when Nate is looking for it, here comes everybody else. Right. This gives us a reason like why everyone is looking for it at the exact same time, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. And they throw in a little bit, there's cutscenes throughout the games. There's a bunch of character interactions in levels. We deal with some human antagonists, primarily Pierre. That guy's annoying as hell. He just progressively follows through a bunch of levels. You shoot at him a bunch of times. He makes you waste a couple health packs and then he runs away. And
he's got a pretty cool jacket though.
Yeah, the story isn't too in depth, and I'm glad they put it there. And this kind of continues, like, it's always throughout the entire Tomb Raider series up until the reboots. Like, it's kind of one big plot line that just builds on everything and gets progressively more wild and wild. I kind of hope at some point they continue on.
Doesn't she like die eventually?
I think her death is faked. Like, she's coming out of a pyramid or a tomb and like all the bricks collapse and everyone thinks she's dead.
Yeah.
But then
like in the last revelation, right?
I think, yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then everything just kind of comes to a head in Tomb Raider Underworld, and that ends. And then we get the reboots, and now who knows what they're going to do next.
Was that the last one, Tomb Raider Underworld, of like that?
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Wow. I don't think I got past three, like playing all the way through. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I haven't played them all myself, but
I didn't know Underworld was related to this series. I thought it was its own separate thing once they kind of went the Prince of Persia route with the controls and everything.
Mm-hmm. As far as I know, I mean, things are probably disjointed to an extent, but I think it's all just one long.
Well, I know that the PlayStation ones are all like one big thing. And I was watching a video on them. And have you heard the history of like Tomb Raider? Because like the games kind of get progressively worse on the PlayStation as you go on. Like, it's the law of diminishing returns. Each subsequent entry is lesser than the one that came before it.
Well, they're all pretty much released 1 year after another.
Exactly.
Just and so bam, bam, bam.
The first one was such a hit, but this is the one they had all the time to develop it and like perfect it and everything. First one was such a hit. Then they made the second one, which like basically they got to use all their ideas that they didn't get to do the first time around. But then that one was a hit and they got to do the third one and then the fourth one. And they just kept like, they were just running out of stuff to do, but they had all these deadlines to meet. And so they didn't have enough time to kind of finesse it. And it just keeps getting worse. And I even think you can feel that playing the first three. You know, by the time you get to three, you're like, not as good as the first two. You know?
Yeah. Two is definitely my favorite.
Two is awesome. And it's got the boat.
That's a whole other podcast.
Is that where I can't remember. At some point they introduced where you can do like, the somersault flipping. Like when you can run and then she'll just start like doing tumbles, basically.
I don't remember that from two. I'm not as familiar with the later games in the series for PS1, so maybe it's one of those.
Yeah.
I haven't played Last Revelation or Chronicles in 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played a little bit, never to completion. There was a lot of games to catch up on.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on levels? They take us to all different kinds of locations, caverns, Greece, or Rome, Atlantis. I think we all agree Cistern sucks.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh,
Cistern's rough.
Cistern's rough.
It's just so big and it's so like so many paths. One thing that I, especially when I was in the Cistern, that something was kind of like scratching the back of my head was the early. I wonder if it wasn't for Tomb Raider, like what kind of level designs would we get in later games? Like, I hate to make the comparison, but like Souls-like, like for the FromSoft games, these levels, big levels, and you go down these paths and everything just comes right back around to a shortcut back to the main area. And I thought it was really cool. I mean, it's easy to get lost in that level, and there's so many different puzzles.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I don't like the level, but I appreciate what it does.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense at all.
No, absolutely. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, yeah, I love the Midas level. I think there was one in Egypt that it's one of the earlier levels in Egypt that I was not a fan of. I'm trying to remember. It was I don't remember enough. Yeah. Well, anyway, there was one in Egypt I didn't like, but the ones I did like, I did love the one with the giant underground Sphinx.
Yep.
That one was great. Any one where there's a big open area, I always thought was cool. Like in Rome, the Colosseum thing, you know, was great. I hated the mines. Like towards the end, like I said, with the lava, and the mines were just ugly. It's just rock and lava. It doesn't look great. Very pixely. Hard to understand what you're supposed to do. That was a lot of them too, where I was like confused where I was like finding secrets and stuff, and what I'm supposed to do was just confusing.
See, now I kind of liked the mines because it takes away your weapons and everything and kind of strips you down to that basic puzzle solving platforming element of the game. Like that part of the mines was cool. I liked going around and, oh no, is there going to be an enemy? I can't defend myself. What am I going to do? And that kind of stuff, just fully 100% relying on your brain to get you through that level. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, sure, sure. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. But it still had all the lava. And I was like, F.
That's true.
after you fight, is it Pierre the last time?
Yep.
In the mines, it's right after that you have to do that giant platforming part with the lava.
Yes.
Hands down my least favorite.
Oh no, that wasn't Pierre. That was they brought in like three other like random guys that
Oh yeah. Like whatever the guy was.
How about playing through this whole game, going through caves, going through Rome and Egypt, and then there's a kid on a skateboard with Uzis.
Yeah, I know.
What? Coincidentally, he's in a giant skate park.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Church, it was the 90s, man, and everything was extreme, bro.
Extreme with an X.
Yeah.
Yes. But hey, at that point, I finally got the Uzis, and the Uzis are awesome.
I think that's when I got them, too.
Yeah, I took some notes throughout levels as I was playing, but nothing really. I really enjoy the early levels where you're kind of just allowed to just kind of like breathe and experience it before they start kind of ramping it up with the enemies and the puzzling. Yeah, the aqueduct level, the Midas level, which I think that was the coolest. Like I just so inventive. I made a note for the cistern. All I wrote was bleh. Yeah, I agree kind of with the mines, even though the first level of the mines, I had no note, but just having that relief, because I assume if I don't have weapons, either I'm just going to be running from enemies or I'm just not dealing with enemies, which kind of felt like a little relief.
Yeah.
Because things were getting a little wild there. But then, of course, they just amp it right back up with all the mummy monsters and whatnot.
As far as the stages go, I definitely think the first half of the game is stronger than the second. I really liked exploring Peru and swimming through the tunnels and fighting dinosaurs. And then the Greece levels with the Midas and the Colosseum and that vertical chamber where you find all the keys.
Yes.
Second half of the game, I didn't think was as good. I didn't like the Egypt levels as much. To me, that was the worst set of levels in the whole game. I love the atmosphere and the music and some of that stuff, but to me, the levels weren't as fun. I did oddly like the Atlantis levels with the weird pulsating meat walls and the enemies that would pop out of eggs. And I actually kind of have an interesting story. So I was finishing this game up and it was 4:20. So think of that what you may. And I wanted to have a snack. And so I set my controller down, and I didn't realize that I was standing in the middle of one of these pulsating meat tunnels. And I just remember looking at the screen and being like, wow, that's kind of cool. I got up and I went got my snack, some coffee and a cookie, and came back and sat down. And I heard this weird snoring noise coming from the screen. And I'm like, wait a minute. Is that Laura snoring, standing up? Like, because I had put the controller down for about 10 minutes. And I'm like, I've never heard of that before. I didn't know that was part of this game. And as soon as I moved the controller, of course, it stopped. Huh. And I have looked online. I've looked everywhere for people noticing Laura snoring. And this is not something that anyone has ever posted online. So I'm like, did I just uncover something weird from this old game that no one ever has before? And I still have not found an answer about that snoring. So I'm wondering if maybe I was just losing my mind or what was going on there.
Maybe if you leave Laura just still for so long, like after a certain amount of time, they do that as like kind of joke sort of thing. Like she's sleeping.
Yeah,
they could.
I know there's a couple times when you can like kind of hear like distant enemies, but I don't remember anything sounding like snoring per se. Although it could have been. I wonder.
That could have been it. I was in the middle of one of those meat tunnels and there weren't any enemies around me. So I'm like, what could that possibly be?
Strange.
I'm with you though on the Egypt levels. I think those are the worst ones. And there was that one level with like, where you had to like unlock stairs and like move bridges to go, right? That was in Egypt, I think. That level sucked. That one took forever.
Yeah.
A lot of moving parts.
Is that the one where there's like a platform in the middle of an open area and you have to put keys on each side of the platform?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. That's I did not like
that. That's the one level I had to check online.
Yeah.
Cause I was completely stuck.
Yeah.
And I completely like didn't put two and two together. There was a switch that if you switched it, it would turn these slopes into stairs. And I didn't realize that I'd missed one set of slope. And once I had that, I was like, oh, okay. Now I got it back on track.
And it's so funny. That always happens whenever you figure out what it is, you look online, you're like, so obvious.
Yeah.
So obvious. Such an idiot.
I've got a couple other 3-word reviews here that I would like to include. So we got @RealJesseHauer says, not a fan. It's too bad. I mean, not everything's for everybody. That's understandable, I guess, but it's a damn shame. And then we have I think it's Lara Rumana says the best game. And it's from definitely a Tomb Raider fan. I think it's like a big Tomb Raider fan account. So I appreciate getting involved. So we hadn't really touched too much on music or sound, not a ton to say about it, but I think it's worth talking about that a little bit. What'd you guys think of the sound of the game? Music, sound effects,
it's minimalist, but it works perfectly. There's very rarely any music in the game. It's, you know, silence. You hear echoes of Laura's footsteps. You can maybe hear enemies or creatures making noises in the background. Music just tends to play during like dramatic sequences, or if you walk into a new area and you get to see like what's laid out in front of you, some music will play. I thought it's really good. It's not prevalent throughout the game, but it's great music and really works towards creating a kind of an atmosphere of darkness and dread.
Absolutely.
Isolation.
You can tell the game designers were very confident in their sound design and music choices. The emotions they wanted to elicit from you, I think they nail with the sound design and the atmosphere and the music. When you're supposed to be worried and kind of getting stressed, they'll kick in some music, you know, they'll like kind of speed up when they want you to kind of have your time to look around. They'll give you some lighter stuff to kind of get you into that. It's so, I cannot, like, 10 out of 10 on the music and sound design in Tomb Raider. They absolutely nailed it. Very good.
Yeah, it was cool to see kind of like such a cinematic approach.
Mm.
At the time, like, I know that was in there when they were starting to have more ability to do these sorts of things, but Tomb Raider is like the one that kind of comes to mind when it's the 3D realm and whatnot. And sound cues, yeah, they're always spot on. I mean the secret little sound effect, the doo doo doo, I think it's just always great. It's you just feel so rewarded every time you hear that sound. You're like, you know what? I just found a secret.
Yeah.
Kind of little.
That's actually my text alert. When I get a text message, that's what plays as a little.
Awesome.
And one thing I noticed this time through is that Laura doesn't really speak as she's picking up items. Maybe this is just a false memory from the later games, but I remember her going, aha, or making little comments when she would pick stuff up. And she does not do that in the first game.
Yeah. Yeah. She only grunts and screams when you fall to your death, or even if you jump from a high location into water, if it's high enough, she will scream like she's going to die, but then you hit the water and it's fine, which I thought was funny because I'm sure they couldn't program everything. But overall, it's pretty good. One thing that I think is kind of neat that I never really hear referenced, and it's just, I don't know if a lot of people know that, but a lot of PlayStation 1 games, well, I don't know if a lot, but there were some PlayStation 1 games that you could put your game into a CD player and play the music. It was the developers had to do this because a lot of the, you know, CD sound, they would just do CD tracks on the disc. And Tomb Raider was one of those games where you could throw it in a CD player, has a full track list of all the sounds.
That's awesome.
I remember back in, you know, mid late 90s when I used to play Dungeons and Dragons, we didn't really have Dungeons and Dragons kind of music, and I was like, hey, let me throw in Tomb Raider. It's a little something, at least.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah.
So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, the Saturn version has that too.
I don't know much about Saturn.
Yeah, the Saturn version also acts as a CD. I remember just kind of discovering it by accident. I put it in a CD player and I'm like, I wonder what will happen. And you could listen to every single song in the game. And I would actually do my homework while listening to the music from Tomb Raider. I kind of had to keep it a secret, though, because while it's cool to listen to video game music now in 2023, back then I would have gotten ridiculed by like everybody. So I just kind of had to listen to it in private by myself as I was doing homework. And going back to the sound effects, there's one sound effect when Laura is pushing blocks where she kind of goes, "Arr!" And I always thought that that was pretty funny. Back when I first played the game, I thought it was like an enemy making the sound. So I'm like, oh no, as soon as I push this block out, I'm going to get attacked by a bear. And every time I hear that now, I think back to the first time I played the game.
That's funny.
Yeah. With the grunting, I do think it's cool that, again, this was the era when they first started implementing more voice and sound. And essentially, we get a fully voice-acted game, which is pretty cool. Minimalist, but it did the job. As we're kind of moving to wrap things up here, we do our three-word reviews. And, I mean, we can't move on from three-word reviews without doing our own. Hopefully we all came up with something. Curtis, what would be your three-word review?
Well, I'll tell you, Church, I completely forgot about the three-word review, and I didn't come up with much, but
I didn't prompt anybody for this either, so I'm just kind of throwing it all on her lap.
That's
keep
okay.
You on your toes.
I'm good at working like this, and you know, we haven't really mentioned, we mentioned it briefly, but there was you know, Tomb Raider, the movie. I have it here on VHS. You guys can't see it, but have it on VHS here, and there's some great quotes on here that I thought would make great three-word reviews.
Okay.
I'm going to give you some options that I turned down, but I think still work. So, woman of action, great. See, it says,
yeah, oh yeah.
Action. Icon of cool, another great three-word review.
Ooh, that's a good one.
But the one I think I'm going to register as my official three-word review for Tomb Raider this month is going to be Angelina Jolie delivers. I'm going to go with that one.
That works. That works. Dan, how about you?
All right. Pulsating meat walls.
Sums it up.
There you go.
Sums it up. I like it.
That's yeah. that's my bedroom nickname, actually.
I thought I was the only one.
Nice. Well, mine's less exciting, but I went with A Legend Begins.
Nice.
Mentioned the movie. I do think it's definitely worth mentioning kind of the legacy post original Tomb Raider. Got a whole slew of games, movies. The first Tomb Raider movie with Angelina Jolie was huge.
Yeah.
Especially for video game movies.
And like no one perfectly, like there is no one that you could have cast better than Angelina Jolie at the time. She absolutely like was Lara Croft, you know, that earlier Lara Croft version before the remakes. It's Angelina Jolie. Come on. Perfect.
And I know up until that point, there was like official Lara Croft, like model. I think there might've been one or two of them before Angelina Jolie, but I gotta imagine like they were probably not too jazzed that they're gonna give it to this big Hollywood actress instead of, hey, I've been doing Lara Croft for years now. But yeah, Angelina Jolie nailed it.
That's Hollywood, baby.
Yeah.
I was so stoked for this movie when it first came out. I remember I was gonna go for my birthday because it came out in June and my birthday is in July. And I was taking my girlfriend with me, and she had two friends visiting from out of town. They were film students from California. And they're like, you're going to go see that crap? And I just remember being so hurt and offended, like, because I was so excited to see this movie, and they just pooped all over it. And they actually ended up coming with us, and we're just talking through the whole movie and joking and making fun of it. And it wrecked the whole experience for me.
That's too well, bad.
Dan, let me ask you, what are your thoughts on the film?
I actually have not gone back to watch it since that original time because it was so wrecked in my mind. But I need to do that pretty soon.
Well, I don't think it's that great. It's not the worst thing in the world, but it's also not great.
Yeah, I'm sure they had a point with their ridicule and their mocking, but
the problem with the movie is there's not a lot of like tomb raiding.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I remember there being like a robot that was fighting her in the mansion, and I'm like, yeah, where did this come from?
Yeah. But James Bond is the bad guy, which is cool.
So yeah, Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time either myself. And I remember enjoying it, but I definitely didn't love it. But I was like, you know, we all come from the generation where the first big video game adaptation was one of the worst things ever to grace the screen.
Sir.
Are you a defender?
Misunderstood gem.
Okay. So, of course, we're talking about Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Ooh, but
I thought you were talking about Street Fighter for a second.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also a misunderstood gem.
You mean Street Fighter or Super Mario?
And for anybody watching, he has these movies on hand.
I love collecting video games. Video game VHS is my jam. I'm still looking for Double Dragon. I don't have that one yet.
Oh, yeah. Oof. Double Dragon. Yeah. So then regarding the future of the series, I mean, I love Tomb Raider. Like, as I said, I haven't played them all because later 90s, early 2000s, like I got very much into like online PC gaming, like multiplayer based stuff. So I kind of have like a big blind spot. So I've only dabbled in Legends and Chronicles. I hadn't played Angel of Darkness, which from everything that I hear, like that's the one you don't play.
You need to play it out of morbid curiosity. It's so bad, it's almost unbelievable.
Yeah, I'll definitely give it a go at some point. And then, of course, we got the reboots, which great games. I still kind of miss the old style Tomb Raider, and I'm very curious where they're going to go, because with the reboots, they kind of did their trilogy that they'd planned, and now it's up in the air. So we'll see if they try to actually bridge the game more, or if they're going to go more with that style. Chris, you haven't played too many of the others.
I missed the PS2 era, missed that entirely. I never had a PS2. I had a GameCube, so I missed all those games. I played a little bit of the first remake, and I thought it was okay. To me, it just felt like kind of an Uncharted ripoff, you know? I'm such a OG. Like, the first two Tomb Raider games for me are just like, that's cream of the crop, baby, right there. And when it wasn't kind of delivering that, I was like, oh, this is just Uncharted again. You know, like, I've been here, done that, you know, wasn't my jam, but I'm sure they're great games, you know?
I think they're great games, but if you're looking to replicate that experience of playing the original Tomb Raiders, they're definitely much, much, much different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. More standard, modern action adventure, semi open world games with all your little notes and stuff all over the maps of collectibles and stuff.
Yeah.
Overall, I think the series is mostly maintained a certain level of quality. It's had some dips. Unfortunately, at this point, I think, you know, here we're almost going on 30 years since the series started, that the hype and the status isn't really there anymore.
No.
Lara's definitely not the sensation that she was. And also being a wild thing that, you know, a video game character became such a pop icon. I mean, it's not the only time that ever happened, but to that degree, it was pretty wild.
Yeah.
And then there was some discussion when we were kind of come up with the idea for doing this podcast of which game to do. And there's a lot of discussion about whether or not to also do Tomb Raider Anniversary, or to do Tomb Raider Anniversary instead of the original game. And have either of you played Tomb Raider Anniversary?
No,
I have played it. I'm glad we're not doing that this month, because it's a completely different game.
Yes.
To me, it's just a dumbed down version of the original game with better graphics and more cinematography stuff, like big dinosaur chase scenes and all that. It kind of controls like the Prince of Persia, the newer ones like Sands of Time, that kind of thing. I'm sure by itself it's an okay game, but comparing it to the original, it's kind of garbage, at least in my opinion. Yeah. If I was able to separate it from the original game, I might be able to enjoy it more, because I'm sure it's a fine game, but
yeah,
it detracts from the original in my mind.
Yeah, I really enjoy it on its own, but as what it is, I think it just doesn't hit the same. They change the level designs and the vibe's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. It's just not as it doesn't have the heart, I guess, but it's still cool. And I think it's worth playing if somebody, it's hard to say if somebody's like, well, I don't want to play the original game, it's just too old, it's too retro, to say, well, play this instead. I don't know if I could do that, because I think it's better to play where the game came from than a remake, where it's not on the level, say, of like the remakes of like some of the Resident Evil games, I think are the definitive versions, but this is not a definitive version. It's really cool. Like, I love that they added in so many of the future gameplay elements, like climbing, you know, up ladders and swinging and some of that stuff, but it's just not the same game, but it's cool. Right. But it's worth checking out.
And maybe saying it's garbage is a little too harsh. I'm sure, like I said, on its own, it's a fine game, but compared to the original, it's like a cheap imitation.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let's close things out here. I know we did our three-word reviews, but final thoughts. What are your final thoughts on Tomb Raider to anybody who hasn't played, and should they play it? I don't want to steal your questions of Doom, but kind of do that in a little bit more free form.
Well, you should absolutely play this game, would be the answer to the first question. Should you own it? That's a tough one. I don't know, because it's definitely not for everyone. You know, if you're not into tank controls, no. So is it worth owning? I don't know. That's kind of,
it's super cheap. So that's one thing. It's not an expensive retro game. Yeah. So,
and then if I were to, out of five, I love it. I personally, I think it's so great, but being objective, I would probably give it a 4 out of 5, like for the, judging it at the time, like when it came out, dude, it was firing on all cylinders. It was great, with a few nitpicks here and there, you know?
Yeah. How about you, Dan?
So I would say yes to all of those questions. It's definitely worth playing. It's definitely worth owning. Maybe it's just a little bit of nostalgia-tinted glasses getting in the way, but I just absolutely love this game. It's one of my all-time favorites. I think if you can master the controls, if you can just get past that initial learning curve that I think stops a lot of people, you're going to discover that there's a lot to love about this game. And hopefully, if you're out there listening and you've never played it, you do. Rating it out of 5. Again, I have to give it a 5 out of 5. There's never a dull moment in this game. It's like everything you do has a purpose. Even just exploring for hours, like trying to find a switch that you might have overlooked, I still had fun doing it. Whereas if you look at some modern games today, like The Witcher or Red Dead Redemption 2, where you're just like riding on a horse for 30 minutes or like walking slowly through a camp and like reading walls of texts from books that you picked up. To me, there's a lot of like really dull, slow moments in the game that kind of wreck like the momentum of the game a little bit. Tomb Raider just doesn't have any of that. It's fun from the second you pick it up till the second you're done. It's just go, go, go. Fun, fun, fun.
Similar sentiments for me. I guess with the caveat that if you are a person that enjoys retro games, absolutely. Like, I mean, this game is an icon. It did so many unique and original things so well at the time. If you hold it up, versus games today, it has its fair share of issues. Absolutely. But, keep trying. Anytime you play a retro game, you should be kind of judging it from the standards at the time to really, put it into perspective. Absolutely recommend it. It's pretty accessible now, especially if you have, some of the PC platforms. I'm not sure. Does anybody know if it's on like PSN or Xbox?
I don't know. I can't imagine it wouldn't be on PSN.
Yeah. I know for sure it was on PSN for the PS3.
Hmm.
But I don't know about PS4. I know sometimes they're limited with their collection of old games.
Yeah.
Well, if nothing else, Steam, GOG, it's there. Definitely worth checking it out. And for a good part of the series, I think they're all worth playing. So, upcoming games of the month for the next couple months. So, May will be River City Girls. Really cool beat 'em up. Definitely recommend playing along or checking out the game. At least know about the game. It's awesome. It's a really good one. Normally, the Cartridge Club for April does a Legend of Zelda game. This year, we decided to push it back because it's too close to a time in for the next big Zelda release, Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. So that will be covered for June's Game of the Month.
That's going to be interesting because, it comes out May 12th. We're doing it in June. Like how far will everyone have gotten in the game? Cause that's a huge game.
Probably a big game. Yeah. I would assume.
Interesting to see. That'll be a fun discussion for sure.
Yeah. There's talks about maybe trying to use 2 months, but we're like, we've done other big long games for Game of the Month. Yeah. We'll just see what happens.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we don't have a game locked in yet for July, so just keep an eye out. We'll post about it on Twitter or Discord.
I'll tell you what, though. Church, I'm sure you can agree. We've seen the options, and they're all great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, whatever we go with, I think it's a lot to look forward to. Okay, so that is going to do it for this episode of the Cartridge Club Game of the Month podcast. Again, if you'd like to get involved with the club, I'd encourage you to follow us on Twitter at Cartridge Club NA. You can also visit our Discord, which has had a lot of discussion this month for Tomb Raider. And then there's also the Cartridge Club forums at cartridgeclub.org. To those of you interested in supporting the club beyond a review of the podcast app of your choice, I'd like to mention that the club is entirely funded by pledges made from members of our community. We're extremely grateful to those supporters. And if you're interested in becoming one of them, please look into how you can do that at patreon.com/cartridgeclub. So then real quick, I'd like to give you guys a chance to plug any social medias or anything you got going online. People can look you up, look forward to, check out. Curtis, where can people find you? What you got going on?
You know, I got stuff going on. You can find me on Instagram. That's where I post mainly, at Curtis Friesel. Yeah, not a whole lot of gaming stuff lately, but I have been throwing up a lot of sketch comedy or stuff that I've been in the past, acting stuff. So some fun videos for you all to enjoy. Go check it out.
Awesome. Dan?
All right. So I don't really have a whole lot of online things that I do. I don't have a YouTube channel or a podcast or anything. Not really a whole lot of social media, but I do have a blog, Dan Geeks Out at blogspot.com. Basically, it started out as a way to play through my backlog. I would just review each game as I played it, and I'm up to about 450 something reviews now. That's really the only place you can find me, Dan Geeks Out. Otherwise, I do have like social media, like Twitter, that kind of stuff. It's all Dan Geeks Out, just one big word. Not very active on those, though.
Sure. Awesome. Yeah, people definitely check out the blog there. And for me, you can find me at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, The Game Grinder. You know, check me out there. I don't do a whole lot of stuff on YouTube, but for anybody who likes occasional unboxing videos, I'm your guy. That's about all I'm doing these days. But, you know, I put some other things up there here and there. Again, I want to thank you guys very much for joining in for this podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And then
thank you for having me.
Thanks for everybody for listening, and we look forward to hearing from you soon. Thank you for joining us. CCU Night.